Okay, we're going to start the ARSA committee meeting. It's now being called to order because we do have a quorum. And Winter, if you could please take the roll.
Chair Del Carlo.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Arascada. Regent Batista.
Present.
Regent Brown.
Present.
Regent Fernandez.
Present.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you, Winter. And with that, we will go to, we're going to do the land acknowledgement at the full board meeting. And so we'll go to public comment. For those of who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 933-5568-7402 and then the passcode. This is the easy one. 555-555. And if you can get through all that, you deserve to be heard. Is there any public comment at GBC? Oh, I see somebody. Yay. Go ahead. You have 2 minutes. So please state your name. Please state your name and spell your last name for us.
Oh, I'm the facilitator. There's none at this time here.
Oh, I'm laughing because we never have public comment up there. Would you like to say anything?
I'm not
Thank
sure.
You. Okay.
You tried.
I tried. Okay, let's go on. See, I always have a fun meeting. If we can't have fun, we shouldn't be here. Okay, is there any public comment in the Reno System Office?
Yes, there is.
Thank you, Regent Arascada. Okay, please state your name and spell your last name for us, and you have 2 minutes.
Perfect. Thank you. My name is Ryan Abrahamian. My last name spelled is A-B-R-A-H-A-M-I-A-N. And yeah, good morning, everyone. I'm really excited to be here. I work for UNR's College of Engineering in our advising center. I'm here today just to make a brief public comment in support of items 5, 6, and 7 that you're considering today, which is requesting approvals of our aerospace engineering programs. The College of Engineering, we're very excited to add undergraduate and graduate programs in aerospace to the list of our other outstanding degree programs. On campus at the university, there's been a really high degree of interest in these programs for many years. The college began working on an aerospace engineering degree in 2017. Our mechanical engineering department chair, Petros Volgaris, came to the university in 2020 to continue the development of these programs, but unfortunately, this momentum it slowed during the pandemic. Even with these setbacks, the college was able to start a minor in aerospace engineering in 2021, so I get to see a lot of those students. As of this week, because we checked the numbers just a couple days ago, we currently have 68 students that have declared this minor in aerospace, and 63 of the 68 have a major in mechanical engineering. In our advising center, we oftentimes have students ask us when our undergraduate and graduate aerospace programs will begin. They do this with us all the time. They ask us almost daily. At our recruitment events, this is one of our top requested programs. Speaking on behalf of our advising staff with the College of Engineering, with the approval of these programs, we're ready to help students that wish to either begin this program or continue their time at the university working on an aerospace engineering degree. We really have no doubt that this will be a popular program for our student population. Our mechanical engineering department has produced students that work at places such as NASA, SpaceX, SNC, and other aerospace companies. However, with the addition of these programs, this specialized curriculum, that students would learn up here at the University in Reno would make them even more marketable and prepared for this industry. In closing, because I know I'm running out of time here, we would like to just thank the Guillemot Foundation for this wonderful gift and opportunity, and also thanks to all of you, the Board of Regents, for taking this under consideration today. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for me now.
Okay, thank you, Regent Arascotto. And with that, we'll go to right here on the campus of Nevada State University, public comment. And I see our Dawson Deal.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Dawson Deal, President of the Associated Students of the University of Nevada at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm here just to quickly express our support for agenda items number 5, 6, and 7, the bachelor's, master's, and PhD degrees in aerospace engineering. The aerospace program is something that we're often asked about when we bring new students, prospective students, and incoming students to campus. So we're super excited that these programs now have potential to be implemented, as well as the agenda item number 8, the Doctor of Physical Therapy. Many of our public health students that study kinesiology are seeking a physical therapy, a Doctor of Physical Therapy program, and may not always be willing or able to come down to UNLV for that program. So this will certainly help with accessibility to this program and degree in the north. And then also item number 9, the Master's in Arts in Strategic Public Relations and Advertising. These programs will certainly improve the academic breadth of our university and improve the scope of programs available to our students, and we urge your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And seeing no other public comment, we will now go on to item number 2. We have 5 consent items, and does anybody on the committee want to pull out anything on consent? Okay, seeing none, then I'll entertain a motion to approve all 5 consent items.
I'm sorry, Chair, we need to go to the phones.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot all about it. It didn't say that in here, did it? Oh, okay, to the phones. Do we have anybody on the phone?
There's still a caller. Caller with the number ending in 5015.
Oh,
please
my
press *6 to unmute, state and spell your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes to address the ARSA committee.
Thank you, and my apologies for skipping over you.
They're not unmuting for this one either, Madam Chair. There's no other callers.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then we'll go on to item number 2, motion for consent item approval. Regent Heather Brown and a second from Regent Batista. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all in favor of the consent items for approval?
Aye.
Say aye. Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Okay, motion seconded and carried, and we'll go on to item number, let me pull my page, 3. We'll go to the 2025 Regents Awards, and we'll go to Vice Chancellor Daniel Archer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I've got several awards. I'm going to name each award and each respective recipient here. So start out with the Sam Lieberman Regents Award for Student Scholarship. We have 9 recipients here. First one is Ulu Femi Arenoso from UNR, Riley Gillis from UNR, Giovanni Jones from CSN, Drew McKay from WNC, Sophia Roman from TMCC, Carissa Sina Fodenright from GBC, Nicole Thomas from UNLV, Celeste Velasquez from NSU, Eden Woolday from UNLV. The next award is the Nevada Regents Outstanding Classified Staff Award. Scotty Lockram from TMCC received that one. The next award is the Nevada Regents Award for Creative Activities. There are 2 recipients here. Andrew Lenard from CSN and Dr. Jennifer Belair from UNLV. The next award is the Nevada Regents Teaching Award. Dr. Megan Latee, TMCC, Dr. Brandon Eddy from UNLV, and Dr. Melissa Morris from UNLV. Next award is the Nevada Regents Academic Advisor Award. And again, we have 3 recipients here. Tara Conley from TMCC, Dr. Han Fin Hu from UNLV, Dr. Malia Mito Cafferanto from UNR, The next one is the Nevada Regents Researcher Award. Again, we have three recipients here: Dr. Ju Wan Ju from UNLV, Dr. Vladimir Pravo Sudov from UNR, and Dr. Monica Miller from UNR. And then the last one we have is the Nevada Regents Rising Researcher Award here. Dr. Kavita Batra from UNLV, Dr. Joanna Blaschak from UNR, Dr. Yong A. Choi from NSU, Dr. Pingbu Chu from UNR, Dr. Tessa Kilgenkamp from UNLV, Dr. Lee K. from UNR, Dr. Andre Lindsay from NSU, Dr. Jamie Palmer Amasota from NSU, Dr. Nicole Short from UNLV, and Dr. Kristen Vander Mullen from DRI. Congratulations to each one of our recipients.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Archer. And for our new members on this committee, these are very prestigious awards that are given. And each, and you, I know you know this, Carlos, each campus nominates, and there's a committee, and they're highly vetted. And in the fiscal impact, I won't read it, but there are monetary awards for these awards. And I know that it's wonderful to be recognized when you're doing research and doing your job. And these people have gone above and beyond. And so it's really wonderful to be recognized by their colleagues. And I had asked Daniel to say their names because I think it's really important that we don't just do a motion because we know we're going to pass it, of course. But it was just, I just thought it was a little more of a personal touch to have your name at least said in public. So if there's no other comments or question, I'll Carlos, do you have a question?
Chair, if I may make a quick comment here. Sure. Carlos Fernandez for the record. I just wanted to actually particularly give a shout-out to Nicole Thomas, first of all, for receiving the Sam Lieberman Regents Award. Sam was an incredible regent and really gave a lot of service in himself to this board and was happy to be able to know him and know that there's the scholarship dedicated to this. But just for the record, just a specific shout-out to Nicole. I've known her for a very long time, and I've seen her really transition through her career into the place she is today. So though I'm equally impressed by all these different candidates and those that are going to be recognized here. I think, you know, having worked with the student government at the undergraduate level, GPSA at the graduate level, and really shaking things up, it's great to see her be recognized. So I just wanted to put that on the record. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I'll entertain a motion for approval.
I'd like to move to approve the nominations for the 2025 Region Awards.
Thank you, Regent Brown. And a second?
Second.
From Regent Fernandez. All in favor of passing the 2025 Region Awards as presented, please say aye.
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 Motion seconded and carried, and we'll go on now to item number 4, UNLV Organizational Unit Proposal, UNLV Practice. And with that, we have Dr. Corrigan, I believe. Is it Corrigan? Kate Corrigan.
There we go.
I think Hello. I missed a name in the middle.
No, Kate Corrigan's just
okay.
Fine.
Okay.
Hi, Chair Del Carlo. Good morning. Vice Chair Arascada, Regents, Chancellor Charlton, Vice Chancellor Archer. It's good to be here with you today. I am Kate Corrigan. I am the Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs at UNLV. And I know you like to have a fun committee meeting. I have something that is a feel-good proposal. So we are here today asking respectfully for your support of the UNLV Practice Institute of Mental and Behavioral Health. The UNLV Practice stands for Partnership for Research, Assessment, Counseling, Therapy, and Innovative Clinical Education. And the UNLV Practice is here today asking to be recognized as an institute. Now, as you know, sadly, Nevada ranks at or near the bottom in the country for overall access to mental and behavioral health services. And this is due to a variety of complex reasons, not least of which is underdeveloped infrastructure, lack of health professionals, and a lack of cohesion between training institutes and programs and different service providers around the state. At UNLV, we have several academic programs that are longstanding and well-established that train health, mental health and behavioral health professionals to support our community. But the UNLV Academic Health Center is increasingly taking shape, and we have recognized a need, a more formal mechanism, if you will, to represent and sort of unify the voice of UNLV's mental health training programs. And so the vision to do that is really creating the practice as an institute. So we propose that the UNLV Practice Institute of Mental and Behavioral Health will be established as a charter to strategically unite and to coordinate UNLV's mental and behavioral health programs, and that this will help to address Nevada's mental health crisis and reach our highest capacity in interprofessional mental health training, services to the community, research in these critical fields, workforce development, and policy. And so let me just share a few important and, I think, salient facts with you. So the practice has already existed for quite some time, in fact, since 2012, as a community-facing mental health training center out of UNLV. It has been housed in the College of Liberal Arts and the College of Education. And in this capacity, the practice is training and graduating approximately 30 graduate student professionals every year and serving more than 500 children and adults in the Las Vegas area, as well as Elko and Humboldt counties. So the impact has been great in the first 13 years, but we feel like transitioning to an institute is an opportunity to expand the impact of the practice on both the training side to graduate more professionals in these important fields and in terms of services provided to the community. And so in 2023, the practice undertook a strategic planning process with key stakeholders at UNLV and in the community, and they crafted a five-year plan with creating this institute as a cornerstone for that vision. I will simply add that in addition to the two colleges who are already working with the practice, liberal arts and education, the institute will bring on the School of Medicine as well as the Greenspun College of Urban Affairs, and we will have academic programs and faculty from educational psychology, the Department of Psychology, Couples and Family Therapy, Social Work, and Public Policy and Leadership, all participating in the Institute. So we ask for your support today. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Any questions from members of the committee? Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record. First, I want to share that I've had an opportunity to visit the practice. Last year, I was in Leadership Las Vegas, and they hosted us, and I was just completely blown away. I mean, just being able to identify the numbers in the briefing material, over 500 adults and children have been seen through the clinic. You train 30 grad students. Like, this isn't just community-facing. It's also academic teaching, and I think, you know, what you just outlined in the strategic plan, it's listed here, the six goals. You know, being able to, you know, expand this reach, but also be take a more academic role. And I do know that I was going to message the Dean Kahn to ask. A couple months ago in December, he announced the unification. What is that called? I'm so sorry.
The Academic Health Center.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that this is a part of all of that.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't also acknowledge Dr. Michelle Paul, who's with us here today. She is not only the executive director and founder of the practice, she is our assistant vice president for mental and behavioral health training, and she works very closely with Dr. Kahn and our other colleagues in the health sciences. And so this institute really pulls those academic programs together, includes the School of Medicine, and really makes mental and behavioral health a cornerstone of our academic health center.
I think that's so wonderful because we've heard it here, we hear it in, you know, spread out throughout the community, and we echo it here, right? We have a healthcare system in Southern Nevada that is not adequate for the amount of residents we have. We currently have 2.4 million people. We have a healthcare system that would serve a population of 1.4 million. Yep. So there's a delta there. And by 42, we're going to have 3 million people in Southern Nevada, according to CBER at UNLV. So I think this is, and I think we rank like, what, 49th in the country with mental health services.
Yeah.
So I think this is, one, a no-brainer, but two, just to be so forward-thinking and wanting to grow this footprint. I think we saw after the pandemic, after the shooting on campus, that mental health services were something that we absolutely had to invest in. And immediately after the shooting, UNLV did just that. And so I think that I will absolutely be supporting this. And I think this is just something that is so necessary. And I know the director is, I think she's here. Hi. And just absolutely wonderful. I love everything that's happening here. And I just, you know, and the fact that you already have a partnership with the Liberal Arts College, Education College, but then realizing that social workers and urban affairs and then even the School of Medicine and it not having silos is something that is so crucial to actually being successful. And the fact that you guys are being so proactive and I appreciate sharing the strategic plan because it's nice to see that this isn't just something that was thought about like and we just need to happen. Like you actually have a plan for implementation, yep. How it's going to actually be effective, and we're going to make a difference in people's lives. And so this to me is just one of these things that this is one of the good things that we get to celebrate when we have incredible staff, faculty, students, everybody who wants to make our community better. And this is just a prime example of how we and she, but UNLV specifically as the largest institution in Southern Nevada, is genuinely providing a community service plus. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Anybody else? I couldn't agree more with my colleague, Regent Brown. I love seeing how UNLV is so good about collaborating with different departments and making things multidisciplinary. That's so valuable, so valuable. Take down those silos. And I love the acronym PRACTICE, and it's all in caps, what it means. And then I see you guys trademarked that, because when I first read this, I thought, wow, I think they're really onto something, and maybe they can market this down the road or something with that name. I mean, that's a... Whoever thought of that, it's probably you back there, right? Right, Michelle?
Sure is.
Oh, what's such a great name. And I agree. We, you know, the whole state, we rank so low. So this is so important coming out of our largest institutions. I couldn't be happier to approve this. And I'd love on a follow-up meeting maybe in a year to see how you guys are doing with it and what are the results, you know, because you're going to be establishing your baselines and then it's just going to incrementally be better and better every year. So really great.
We'd be happy to do that.
Oh, great. So any other questions? Regent Scotta, I know how you're just going to have to wave your hand because I can see you. You're right in front of me, and I see you smiling, so I know you can hear me. Great. Okay, without any further ado, we'll entertain a motion on this.
Chair Del Carlo, I'd like to motion to approve the establishment of the UNLV Practice Institute of Mental and Behavioral Health.
Okay, a second?
Second.
Oh, thank you, Regent Ariscotta. We had a motion and a second. All in favor of approving the UNLV Practice Plan, say aye.
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 Okay. That passes also. Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
You got it. Good, good. We know great things are going to come out of that. Such a needed interdisciplinary in Nevada. Oh, with this, yay. We're going to UNR. This is an exciting one. Let's see. Number five, UNR, it's a program proposal for the BS in Aerospace Engineering, and you're going to be up there, I'm sure, Provost Thompson, for number six, the program proposal for the MS in Aerospace Engineering, and then number seven, the PhD in Aerospace Engineering. So the floor is all yours, and you've got a half an hour. But if you don't need it all, it's okay, too.
I am excited to be here, members of the Arts Committee and Chair, and thank you for that. But I promise I won't take a half an hour with my presentation. I have a number of program proposals, as the chair said, 5, 6, and 7 are all related to a new program in aerospace engineering, and the proposal comes from our College of Engineering. And just a quick point, This is made possible by a very generous gift from the George W. Guillemot Foundation. Mr. Guillemot was an entrepreneur, businessman, and loved aviation and the aerospace industry. After his passing, the Guillemot Foundation was formed, and the trustees, Mr. Tom Hall, Mrs. Marie Guillemot, and Mr. Bill Johnson, came to us at the university to talk about things that the trustees would like to do to build out Mr. Guillemot's vision, and one of those is to create an aerospace engineering program at UNR. We had a number of discussions, and what came out of that was the largest cash gift to UNR for an academic program, which is $36 million, most of which will go to support this program and enable us to build an aerospace engineering program at the university. The funds from the gift will support faculty members. They will support faculty startup, needs for equipment, graduate students, and student research. One of the Guillemot Foundation's interest, and also my faculty's interest, is there is a growing demand for aerospace engineers in Nevada, with industries like the Sierra Nevada Corporation, Pacific Aerospace, CAE, Challenger Aerospace, to name a few, that are hiring aerospace engineers in our state. And there's a very strong student demand through our mechanical engineering program, where we started a minor in fall of 21. And as our advisor mentioned, we have almost 70 students in this minor. We also have an aerospace club that has hundreds of students in it, where they do everything from learn how to fly drones to shoot rockets. And we will be able to draw students from these programs, and every time we go out and recruit students now, we get asked, when is the aerospace engineering program going to start? So we are quite sure it's going to do very well. So for the BS program, the master's and PhD, but particularly the BS program, we will seek accreditation from the Accreditation Board for Engineering and Technology, or ABET. ABET approval comes after you graduate your first student, so we will ask for notification and then go through the process for ABET approval. So we're seeking your approval to offer a bachelor's degree, also a master's and PhD in aerospace engineering, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Does any member of the committee have a question? Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record. When I had my meeting with President Sandoval, I did mention to him that I was going to just bring up something, even though I 100% support this. I love everything. I love the fact that you got a donation. This is clearly future-facing, upscale, high-wage, future-proof kind of jobs. But I did want to share that, and we're going to maybe mention this a little bit in item number 12, but ENCHI is currently conducting a workforce gap analysis, and the whole purpose of that is when we get proposals like this to add majors, to add, degrees, we have a data set to actually compare them to. So even though this one is super clear that there is a future trajectory here, I did want to share just for the record that I think it's really important that this committee and this board have a data set, have actual, facts and figures to be able to match it to make sure that every time we approve, expand, grow, add something to our catalog, that we're actually paying attention to what the student's success rate will be, not just in the classroom, but in the workforce. If we are the workforce pipeline for the state, it's important that everything that we, because these people won't graduate for 4 to 6 years, and we want to make sure that there's jobs available. So where I don't think that there's anything in question in the ones that you're proposing today, I did want to share that because I think it's just so crucial that we're not just making decisions based off of a presentation, but actual data sets. And so I will be supporting this, but I did want to just share for the record that I think it's just important for all of our friends for the future, that it's important that we have we use the studies that are going to be coming out of this committee or this board, excuse me.
Thank you, Regent Brown. For the record, Jeff Thompson, Executive Vice President and Provost at the university. I do want to assure you that not only will we talk with companies in the state and local companies, We also use a service called Lightcast, which is a national program where we can look at job needs, demographics, growth of certain sectors going forward that we consult before we bring these forward. But be happy to make sure we always have that information in the packet.
Yeah.
And just to add on that, we didn't use Lightcast. Actually, your institution, in conjunction with UNLV, is the one creating the report for us. And it's just literally an opportunity for us to take that a step further. And Lightcast is such a valuable resource. I know so many of our institutions use it. And for those who don't know what it is just, I know ENSHE has a subscription. I know GOED has a subscription in our different institutions. But it is just such an invaluable data set. And I think everybody on this board and this committee just wants to make sure that we are taking care of our students moving forward. So thank you so much for actually doing all that back work, which I had no doubt that you did. But I just wanted to share that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Regent Fernandez.
Regent Arascada.
Okay, right after Regent Fernandez. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, thank you so much for this presentation. I just wanted to really highlight and compliment the fact that there's a lot of intentionality behind this, right? The realizing that aerospace engineers is a profession that less than 12% of women are part of, and I think that's really important and a really highly needed program because we constantly hear about this, and I think in sort of today's environment, it's really important to focus on the different needs that our campuses have to close the gap. So I just wanted to give that compliment your way and excited for to support the success of this program as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Regent Arascada.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Provost Thompson, thank you for this opportunity. So with Gen Item number 5, one of the items I was noticing is, well, let me start over. One of the huge compliments I'd like to provide you on the bottom of page 12 is the curriculum of 128 total credits, something that you all, I mean, you all, this is a new program, thanks to the Guillemot Foundation. This is big time. But continuing on page 17 is the projected headcount. I really applaud the tenacity for the first fall semester. If I'm seeing this, is it a 60-student headcount for that first fall semester?
Arascada, I do not have that in front of me, but that is what I remember, that it's about 60 for the first fall semester.
Thank you. And then incrementally it climbs by 15 each semester. Comparatively speaking with our peer institutes, is this proposed size of the first cohort too aggressive, or is this a desired taste for this program?
Regent Arascada, Jeff Thompson, Executive Vice President, Provost for the record. We are very excited about this program, and we've tried to temper our excitement a bit. But at all of our recruiting events at the fall, this is the number one request we get at the university. When is the aerospace engineering program going to start? So we do think it's going to be heavily subscribed. I do expect also there'll be a significant number of students who are in mechanical engineering that will also change their degrees, which will not increase our headcount. But I'm not concerned that we will have problems filling seats in aerospace engineering.
Wonderful to hear.
And you talked about comparators, and that's a... I think for a program that will initially be small in terms of faculty, I think will be significant size. I mean, there are some aerospace engineering programs at very large public research institutions that, you know, have 40 or 50 faculty members. I don't expect we're ever going to be that size, but I do think this will be a significant part of our College of Engineering's enrollment.
Wonderful. I applaud the confidence. One of the highlights, the relationship the University of Nevada has displayed throughout this proposal is the willingness for the University of Nevada Reno to work with campuses to succeed in aerospace engineering. That was on with the user guide beginning on page 27. I really 100% support this entire proposal, and I look forward to its success. Thank you, Provost Thompson.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Regent Arascada. I noticed those numbers, too, and I was talking to Myrtle Gotham before the meeting, and he was just telling me that, you know, he's been on the campus quite a long time, that there's been this demand for, he said, for 10 years. So I really feel like you have really done your research, and you've kind of had to wait because we know money and resources are so limited. And I just want to publicly thank Mr. Gumond, who's up in heaven watching us today, and his foundation. And I know I had met with Tom Hall on this, and I had no idea at the time I met with Tom, who is the executor of the estate, that this was so far along. Because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we're 3-4 years out, and I only met with him last summer. So this is wonderful. I mean, and this is what philanthropy to me is all about. People that have done well in life, they have a passion project that they can leave their legacy to. And he's definitely leaving a legacy. And for those of you from the South that don't know Sierra Nevada Corporation, it's up in Reno. It was founded by UNR graduates, and they are part, big, huge part of NASA. You probably know way more than I do, but they're an amazing, amazing success story by immigrants that came over. So it's all part of this aerospace program, and we're going to have internships right there in Reno. So exciting. Any other comments? I'm very, very excited about this program too. Okay. Since it's so similar, 5, 6, and 7, I'm going to put together as one motion, and I checked with legal counsel to make sure we could do that. And there's no problem doing it. So I will accept a motion from someone for items number 5, 6, and 7.
Motion for approval.
Thank you.
I have a question before that.
Are we doing all?
Would he need to give a presentation on 6 and 7 before we move to approve?
Chair, Jimmy Martinez, for the record, that's what I was just going to suggest. Before, have the presentations move forward all simultaneously, and then take the vote after the presentation so the committee has
good
all the info.
Good point. Thank you. So, Provost Thompson, item number 6.
So, item number 6, and I will be much shorter because most of the introduction is exactly the same. For master's degrees in aerospace engineering, this will come out of our faculty research expertise, where the areas where we will have concentrations in our master's degrees. We will be looking to serve students who have undergraduate degrees in aerospace or related disciplines who would like to move into aerospace engineering, and also be looking to serve people who are employed who would like to further their careers by receiving master's degrees in aerospace engineering. The coursework is defined and set, the basic coursework. Of course, the thesis projects will be something that come out of faculty research and faculty expertise. Masters and PhDs are not accredited by ABET, so we will not be seeking accreditation for these programs. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions on the master's program in aerospace engineering? Hearing none, we'll go to item number 7 for the PhD in aerospace engineering.
Sorry, I should have introduced myself and gone through the whole thing again. Thank you, Chair. Jeff Thompson, Executive Vice President and Provost, the University of Nevada, Reno. For the record, our proposal is for a PhD in aerospace engineering. The PhD will be an exploratory degree for students who want to reach a level of investigation and sophistication in their research prowess and have a PhD that they can use either for going into academia or into the workforce so that they can conduct research. These will be, again, students who have either engineering degrees or closely related degrees who want to pursue a PhD that will be based on research projects that will be tied to faculty members in the College of Engineering. And I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Does the committee have any questions on the PhD aerospace engineering program? Hearing none, I think I can now go to this combined motion to combine items 5, 6, and 7. And do I have a motion?
Chair, I'd like to approve UNR's program proposal for BS, MS, and PhD in aerospace engineering.
Thank you, Regent Brown. We have a second?
Second.
Second from Regent Arascotta. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the BS, MS, and PhD program in aerospace engineering at UNR, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you so much. And you may just stay right there because you're the next item. Let me turn my page. Okay. This was a really good one, too. UNR program proposal, Doctor of Physical Therapy, a DPT.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the ARSA committee. Jeff Thompson, for the record, Executive Vice President and Provost at the University of Nevada, Reno. This request comes out of our School of Public Health and is a request to initiate a Doctor of Physical Therapy program at the University of Nevada, Reno. We're very fortunate that UNLV has an excellent program in physical therapy, which results in a DPT. Unfortunately, in our state, and as in many cases, we do not have enough healthcare providers. Nevada, Northern Nevada, rural Nevada have a dearth of physical therapists based on Lightcast and our research with national organizations. Nevada currently has a shortage of 350 licensed physical therapists, just to bring us to the national average of number of physical therapists per citizens of the state. And, of course, we are a growing state. That is only going to get worse. So with the support of local orthopedic providers and practices, healthcare facilities, we have designed a DPT academic program under the guidance of an accrediting body, which is the Commission on Accreditation and Physical Therapy, or CAPTI, and we have done this in consultation with UNLV and looking at the number of students they have that are apply for admission and accept for admission, and they are well oversubscribed. There are plenty of students who are not only interested but also more than qualified to go to DPT school. This will be a self-supporting program like our PA program, our physician assistance program. And so with your approval, we have designed the curriculum, but we will work through the process to apply and receive CAPTI accreditation with the hope of having our first cohort of students admitted in the winter of 2027.
Okay, great. With any questions from any regents? Comments?
Question.
Okay. Regent Arascotta.
Thank you for that presentation, Provost Thompson. Well done. On a couple questions in regards to, on page 30, provide a clarity for the projected FTE headcount. That headcount, once again, I want to be aggressive, but not overly aggressive, but if we can get a breakdown of that headcount, I'd appreciate it.
So thank you, Regent Arascotta, Jeff Thompson, Executive Vice President and Provost at the University of Nevada, Reno. The headcount is based on the accreditation standards for CAPTI that we would be able to admit a class of 40 each year, and that would be our admitting class size. Based on the applications for students at UNLV and the number that they can accept, and the number that are qualified, we're quite confident we will be able to hit that number in our first year. We have kinesiology programs and programs in everything from, you know, recreation to biology and biochemistry of students who want to go to physical therapy school. And if they do not get into UNLV, they are leaving the state, and most of them do not come back. So I would say I am confident I can hit that number of 40. I appreciate your caution, and you know, we will be careful and work hard to make sure we hit that number. But nothing has that I have seen in any of the data we have gone through or my work with the accrediting body or our faculty leads me to believe we won't be able to hit that number.
I am a strong supporter of physical therapy, so I am heavily confident you will hit that number. Heavily confident. But one of the items that has come into play over the past few quarterly meetings are fee differentials. Anywhere down the road, are we looking at a fee differential for this program?
Thank you, Regent Arascotta. Jeff Thompson, Executive Vice President and Provost, University of Nevada, Reno, for the record. So, no, this program will not be based on the fee structure. It will be a self-supporting program like we do with our physician assistant program. So the fees will be set so that they cover the cost of providing the program.
Thank you, Provost Thompson. That's exactly what I wanted to hear on the record. Appreciate it. Madam Chair, may I make a motion for approval?
You may. Thank you, Regent Arascotta. And a second from Regent Batista. With no other comments, all in favor of the approval of the Doctor of Physical Therapy to prepare graduates to become licensed physical therapists capable of providing high-quality care in various healthcare settings, please say aye.
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 And it's unanimous. And I'm glad you're doing this because I had to wait 3 weeks just to get an evaluation. And in the meantime, you're whatever it is you're doing wrong, you continue to do wrong until you get to the PT. So I'm really glad you're going to have this. We do need more physical therapists.
Thank you. I agree completely based on recent experience.
And as we age, everyone in the room, we're all going to age, hopefully. You need the physical therapy even more and more. So, okay, might as well stay right there because you also have item number 9, UNR program proposal, a Master of Arts in Strategic Public Relations and Advertising. And I'll turn the floor back over to you, Provost Thompson.
Thank you, Chair and members of the ARSA committee. For the record, Jeff Thompson, Executive Vice President and Provost at the University of Nevada, Reno. And my final program proposal for you to consider comes from our Reynolds School of Journalism. And it's a master's degree in strategic public relations and advertising. This would be an asynchronous online degree program for working professionals. And it has also come out of working with our graduates, working with companies in Nevada, and also looking at Lightcast data where there are opportunities to grow programs. And it's focused on a new area of strategic public relations and advertising, which is based on earned and paid media, and we'll have courses in leadership, law, ethics, and quantitative analysis. And student learning outcomes are things like media use, but measurements and analytics associated with media use, public relations and advertising and quantitative outcomes, and of course, media and cybersecurity. This will be a cohort program of 20 to 30 students per class. It's based on expertise we already have in the Reynolds School. And again, this is a question we get asked quite a bit by our graduates of the Reynolds School who are now working professionals. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Provost Thompson. Any questions from any members of the committee? I'm not seeing any. And this was one I thought was really great, that you're going to do it all online and to cater to that person that has already graduated with their public relations or degree, and now they're out in the field, and they're going to only need to take 2 classes a semester. That's how I got my master's. It was 2 classes a semester working full-time plus a commute, and if you really want it badly enough, you can do it. So this is very doable.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo, and I will tell you, in the process of setting this program up, like a lot of our programs, we start out thinking about this as an in-person, maybe evening program or something like that. And when you talk with the employers and the people who are interested in the program, this has to be an asynchronous online program to be successful.
Well, it's that working adult that's just trying to get ahead in their field. So it's a great program. Any comments? Oh, okay. Okay. Regent Arascotta, did you say something?
Make a motion for approval.
Oh, thank you so much. And a second from?
I'll second.
Okay, Regent Brown. Hearing no further discussion, a motion is to approve the Master of Arts in Strategic Public Relations and Advertising. All in favor, please say yes. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Another one passes unanimously.
Thank you.
So that's going to help enrollment, too, all these programs you have. So absolutely. I'm happy about that. Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Provost Thompson. And with that, we'll go to item number 10, which is WNC Program Proposal and AAS CTE Teacher Training for Business and Industry Professionals.
Thank you, Chair Del Carlo. I'm for ARSA today, WNC. This is Kyle Dalby, for the record, has a proposal to help out the CTE teacher training. It's an AAS, and I will have Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs, Dana Ryan, give you a quick overview. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having us. My name is Dana Ryan, Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs, for the record. We are really excited to bring this particular program to you. This is an Associate of Applied Science and CTE teacher training specifically for business and industry professionals. This was developed over a period of about 2 years with the Nevada Department of Education, the Office of Career Readiness, Adult Learning, and Education Options, CRELEO, which you may know as the Career and Technical Education Office. This degree is designed to provide a degree pathway for pre-service or new high school CTE teachers who are licensed under business and industry. The purpose of this is to support their development as teachers and help retain them in the classroom role. Business and industry licensed teachers are those who have work experience in a teachable field that aligns with the federal career cluster designations and the state-approved high school CTE programs. These are things like agriculture, business, culinary, construction, video production, social services, military science, welding, things of those nature. I believe that Nevada has 84 approved programs under those 16 career clusters, high school programs. BNI CTE teachers often come to the classroom with well-developed technical skills, but little or no post-secondary education, classroom school experience, or pedagogical knowledge. They are not traditionally trained high school teachers. Schools and districts often have to contend with the same kinds of scarcity of resources that we do, and often the availability and access to comprehensive mentorship, training, and support for new business and industry teachers is really limited. Combined with the fact that they often have to take a significant wage reduction, many of these educators who come from private to public sector, they don't stay. There's also often an unexpected increase in the volume and intensity of work, and that often we see them leave the classroom within the first 3 years. Because these teachers are hard to find and very, very hard to replace, this has a huge impact on students, on the economic well-being of the community that relies on a skilled populace to fill jobs, and on the pipeline of students that come to our community college programs. This program will allow us to provide on-time support to help teachers navigate the classroom and the teaching environment, meet the requirements of permanent licensure. They are, most of them, on a provisional license. And for those who do not have a degree, and this is critical, this is the case for many folks in the skilled trades areas, it puts them on a degree pathway that allows for career and wage advancement. For those without a degree, this is truly the final piece of a puzzle that's been incomplete in Nevada for a long time. By providing a complete degree pathway from an associate degree here with us, a Bachelor's of Applied Science in CTE Leadership at TMCC, and an opportunity to go on to a master's program. This really provides a pathway that was not existent prior to this. People had to go out of state, and it keeps our teachers in our classrooms and educated in our state. So, happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Very interesting. Question from Regent Brown.
Thank you so much, Regent Brown, for the record. So I'm really happy that in point five, you talk about the other related programs within ENCHI. Because from the work at the Workforce Committee, we're talking about that obviously we're going to bring in new programs, but they have to have some kind of systematic approach, something that can be unified and consistent across the system. So I'm happy that you kind of already highlighted this, and it actually sounds like you guys are taking it a step further. So meaning like you're going to expand the program and encompass more of the training. So I'm saying that to say I can't wait, because I'm hoping that we can adopt this across the system and improve upon the things that you've already highlighted here. Because I do think, you know, when we talked about it, and a lot of people on this committee, and it feeds into this committee, right? We don't want to do one-off things at one institution that don't translate. We are a system. And so taking that approach and being methodical when we are thinking through this, some of the things that I wrote down was just the fact that, like, somebody can be a subject matter expert, which is what you want, but they don't know how to necessarily be the teacher in that. And I see a lot of, so my friends are engineers in town, and they'll go back and work. They graduated from UNLV. They'll go back and join a class to be an adjunct professor on this. They don't know how to be a professor. They just know how to talk about what they do in and out, which is valuable. But what you're saying here is that, again, going back to ENSHE and all of our 7 academic institutions are literally the workforce pipeline for the state. And especially in the career and technical education, we want these subject matter experts. We want their expertise. That is invaluable. The wage we pay them is not comparable to the knowledge that we are gleaning from them and the amount of students and just the way that grows. And so I think it's really important that you guys are not just training them on how to communicate, but how to stay within the system, how to actually go get that degree. So if you can keep them and retain them, then they can actually increase and get paid within the ENSHE structure. So I think it's really valuable that you guys are, you know, acknowledging the fact that in order to fulfill these work and these work programs, right, then we have to bring in the right teachers and the right professors and the right experts to actually translate it into them. Recently, Owen shared a report, and it's a mismatch gap, skills gap. And so the report actually lists out a group of students and Nevadans that no longer have jobs because they don't exist. But more importantly, there's jobs that don't have people in them. And this report actually lays this out, and a lot of them are career and technical education pipeline. And so I actually think that, again, I think it's important that we acknowledge that we're not just the system of higher education. We are literally helping and growing the economic footprint of the state. And what you guys are going to do will have a ripple effect that cannot be measured just by what we see in your report here. But I genuinely think we come back in a couple years from now and we'll be able to say we went from X and we scaled it to this because we took the opportunity. Maybe we were losing people at 3 years and now they stay for 9, 10, 12 years. And it's because they feel part of it. We've invested in them in the same way we've asked them to invest in our students. So I think this is really special. And again, you pointed out GBC, TMCC, and UNLV have similar, not similar programs, but coursework for CTE teachers. And I actually think that once this is implemented and we can prove that it's success, I'd like to revisit this so we can actually work with, and I know President Dalpy has a great relationship with the other community college presidents, and I think this is just something that we could see implemented across our system, and we'll use you guys as our flagship.
Ooh. Yay.
Okay.
Awesome.
Any other comments? Regent Fernandez.
Heather always, Regent Brown always makes great points, and I want to double down on that. I am a product of Northwest Career and Technical Academy, where I had some incredible teachers, but there was a big struggle with that. And I think acknowledging the fact that educating, right, is very different than just having that knowledge. But there's such incredible pathways there, because when you can really explain to somebody how they can teach, it just makes the whole experience so much better. So I'm incredibly proud to be a graduate of NWCTA. I'm proud to be able to know that these programs exist, and what a way of finding solutions to something to
again, Region Brown's point, to really expand our pipeline and those that need work and those that just want to learn. I think the work that teachers do is incredibly important, and oftentimes we don't give them enough the credit that they deserve. And people want to teach, right? They do it out of the heart, and I really see that. So I'm glad to be able to see a program that I think is really forward thinking, and do appreciate you bringing this before us today.
Oh, thank you. And I want to say some comments, too, because I think this is a great, great program. And you can be as skilled can be, but then to go teach that to students, it's another whole level. And so I'm so glad you're putting this together. And when I was going through some of the attributes that you will learn, I thought one of them that was so important was just the behavior in the classroom, how to handle unruly students or how to motivate students. Or, I mean, that, you know, because you're almost like a psychologist as a teacher, too. I mean, there's so many aspects to being a teacher that we don't always give credit to. I mean, there are unsung heroes, in my opinion, and I wish they got paid a whole lot more instead of our athletes, but that's another story for another day. And I do want to do a shout-out, too, though. I was so pleased on page 4 of your brief that you mentioned the findings of the Nevada Advisory Committee on U.S. Civil Rights, because I sit on that committee. And did you even know that? I was part of that report.
I did not know that.
Yes, we do 2 reports normally a year. There's 12 of us on the report. It's a bipartisan commission that came out of 1776 when we had our bicentennial as a country. And every state has a commission. And also David Sexton of GBC's on it, and Dr. Sandra Crosgrove of CSN's on it. So this particular subject was the effects of Nevada on the teacher shortage. I thought all the regents were given a report. I can always resend that, but it's devastating when we have teacher shortages, and we really zeroed in on the rural areas too. And this is where CTE is so highly needed, especially with our mining industry around our state. So this is, I'm really glad you guys put this program together, and I couldn't agree more with Regent Brown to come back with in a few time. Proper amount of time once your program's going, and coordinate with the other schools that are doing some other things too. But this will be our standard and our model, I think. Okay? Well done. Well done.
Thank you. So just so you all know, we did launch the coursework for that this semester.
Okay.
So we have 3 skill certificates and a certificate of achievement that all align with this, so that everybody can come in based on whether they just need a license provision, whether they need help passing the praxis. There's an opportunity for them to come in from a whole bunch of different directions. And the response has been far greater than we expected.
Well, I would think that the CTE instructors would be so happy to have some help, because they come in having the skills and knowledge of their expertise, but certainly not how to impart that on the students. Right. So this is going to close that gap.
We hope so.
So wonderful. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to approve the Associate of Applied Science in CTE Teacher Training and Business and Industry Professionals.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Regent Brown.
Second.
Second from Regent Arascada. All in favor, please say yes or aye.
Aye.
Aye. A motion seconded and carried unanimously. So we look forward. Well done, program. Whoever thought of that, was that you?
Oh, right. I mean, you all know I came out of Washoe County School District as the CTE director, so I knew there was a problem here.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of what we do. We bring people that have got the K-12 into our system, and we bridge that gap. So I look forward to whatever you identify as the next hole we need to plug. So thank you.
This is a big one.
Dr. Ryan, for bringing that forward. Thank you, Dr. Dahlman.
Thank you all.
You bet. So with that, we're going to go to item number 11. I got to turn my page. Okay, this is a good one. And we get this normally for the new members every year, once a year. It's the 2023-24 financial aid report. This is an information-only item, but really pay close attention, because it's just the numbers are astounding on how many students get financial aid and from the different sources. And we're lucky we have that because I think our schools would be empty if we didn't have financial aid.
Yes.
So.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm Ashley Salisbury, Director of Student Affairs for the record. I'd like to thank you, Chair Del Carlo, and members of the committee for the opportunity to talk about financial aid today. Is that working? Which one is it? The big one? There it goes. Okay. So we provide this report annually for many reasons. One important reason being that financial aid supports students in their pursuit of higher education, and no student should be denied a college education due to financial barriers. Financial aid provides opportunities for access and success to our students here in Nevada. And while this report fulfills board requirements, it also gives us an opportunity to talk about financial aid in Nevada and compare that to the national landscape. So let's look ahead and talk about the 23-24 financial aid across all ENCHI institutions. Over $728 million were dispersed to well over 65,000 students. This money that goes directly to students' ability to afford their college education, including direct and indirect costs associated with their education. As a financial aid professional, it's reassuring to me that the work our colleagues do in the financial aid offices will not go unnoticed. And as you can see, over the last 5 years, there's been an 11.7% increase in financial aid dispersed to our ENCHI students. We do see a slight dip during the 2021 year due to challenges that COVID brought to higher education, but that trend has continued to increase since then. All seven institutions within the system award financial aid, the greatest amount coming from UNLV. When we look at the difference over the last year, we see that all seven campuses saw an increase in their disbursements, whereas when we look over the difference over a five-year period, we see four of the seven institutions with increased financial aid disbursements. Our hope is moving forward that we'll see all seven institutions with an increase over a five-year period. So overall, I'm happy to share that not only do we see a 6.6 increase over the last year, but a significant 11.7% increase over the last 5 years. Looking at ENCHI student characteristics, here you can see a snapshot of the diversity among our institutions. If we specifically look at the bottom two rows, here we see the proportion of historically minoritized aid recipients versus the overall historically minoritized student populations at each institution. What's encouraging to see here is how similar, if not higher, these percentages are at each institution. And this speaks volumes about the equity and accessibility of financial aid to our students and that they are receiving financial aid at a similar rate of enrollment at each institution. Much like the previous slide, what we see here are similarities in the proportions of financial aid recipients registered with the DRC versus enrolled students registered with the DRC. Having previously worked in a financial aid office, I know firsthand how closely the Disability Resource Center and financial aid offices work together to ensure students are aware of all resources available to them. And the Disability Resource Centers across all institutions in Nevada do a wonderful job communicating with their students to make sure they apply for financial aid and take advantage of all opportunities available. Moving forward, let's look at the average annual Pell Grant disbursements for 23-24. Over the last 5 years, we see an overall trend upwards. As the maximum Pell Grant amount has increased over the years, so has the average disbursement amount. Over 31,000 students within the ENCHI system received a Pell Grant totaling $146.4 million across all of ENCHI. And the average award for ENCHI students in 23-24 was $4,580. There are many reasons why a student would not receive a maximum award. They would need the highest financial need as determined by their FAFSA, as well as enroll as a full-time student. If a student enrolls less than full-time, then their Pell Grant is then prorated to match their enrollment level. And when we compare our average Pell Grant award, ENCHI is just slightly under the national average award. I'm very pleased to share the figures for ENCHI's total loan disbursements. What we see here is an overall decrease from the last 5 years of 6.9% in the usage of federal and non-federal loans, including a slight decrease from the prior year. This decrease within ENSHE also aligns with a continued decrease at the national level for the 13th consecutive year. And while there is a negative connotation, the usage of student loans can be beneficial as it provides financial relief while pursuing higher education. It can help begin the process of credit building. There's fixed interest rates, and some will argue that loans are an investment within themselves for the future. So when used responsibly, student loans can positively impact the futures of our students. But as we see a decrease in loan disbursements, that tells me other types of aid, such as grants and scholarships, are becoming more accessible to our students, creating less of a financial burden after graduation. Our ENSHE financial aid offices do provide many opportunities for students to receive loan counseling, as well as financial literacy information, setting them up for success post-graduation. Financial aid does not just include federal programs, but also state-supported programs. And as you can see, the total dollars awarded from Nevada's six state-supported programs totals $154.7 million, reaching to well over 65,000 students. The largest state-supported program is the Regents Higher Education Opportunity Award, totaling $83.5 million. This program is mostly funded by registration fees set aside and paid by students as approved by the board, reaching to over 50% of the students receiving some type of state-supported financial aid program. The second largest state-supported program is the Governor Gwynne Millennium Scholarship, totaling just over $38 million and reaching to over 23,000 students statewide. So as I mentioned previously, not only are there federal financial aid programs, but also state-supported financial aid programs. And within those programs, there are various categories to note. The first two being grants and scholarships. The two can be similar in some ways, but the difference is being that grants are generally need-based and are not paid back, whereas many scholarships are merit-based, may require financial need, but are also not required to be paid back. And student loans fall into both the need and non-need-based types and must be paid back after graduation. And there are limited opportunities for deferment or forgiveness if a student meets qualifications post-graduation. Work study, on the other hand, is quite different from the previous categories as the program does not directly pay for student course fees. This is a program that can either be need or non-need based that funds a portion of a paycheck a student earns while working in college. This award, however, is still accounted for as a part of the student's financial aid package. So I want to look at the breakdown of the financial aid by category. Loans continue to hold the largest portion at 35.1%. However, this is a decrease from 5 years ago when it held 42% of all categories. This continues to demonstrate the decrease in loans and the increase in other financial aid categories. You can see on the screen here the various aid programs and what sources of financial aid they derive from. The primary sources of financial aid are federal, which will require a valid FAFSA application. State, institutional, and private, which may or may not require a FAFSA or an independent application. Federal sources continue to dominate the world of financial aid, although it is interesting to note that the percentage of federal aid has declined significantly from 2014-15, when it represented 71% of all financial aid. Nationally, federal programs are also the primary source of financial aid, remaining stagnant at 55% from the prior year. As the percentage of federal sources decrease, this means state and institutional sources have increased, and that is due to the addition of alternative financial aid programs, including but not limited to the Millennium Scholarship, Nevada Promise Scholarship, and Silver State Opportunity Grant. So the continued support of these programs and investing in our Nevada students have decreased the reliance on federal programs. There are two types of financial aid. There are need-based and non-need-based awards. You may have already heard me mention those. Listed, you will see which type each award falls into. What you may also notice is there are several awards that cross over into each category. And depending which type the award falls into, that will determine the method of awarding for each student by the financial aid office. What you see here is a historical listing of the last 10 years of need-based versus non-need-based awards. From 2014-15 through 2021, the percentage of need-based aid steadily decreases, which can be attributed to fewer student loans, which are need-based, being borrowed, and an increase in the utilization of non-need-based scholarships, such as the Millennium Scholarship, as an example. In recent years, it seems as though we are seeing some stabilization between the two types of financial aid. I quickly want to share information that is used to determine a student's cost of attendance. Students not only incur direct costs from their institutions, but also indirect costs, which include things like room and board, transportation, and personal expenses, which are all important and necessary to continue their education. The financial aid office has created cost of attendance for each student that will include the direct and indirect costs, which then serves as the student's financial aid ceiling. So in other words, the student cannot receive financial aid that exceeds their cost of attendance. The cost of attendance is also used in conjunction with the result of the FAFSA application to determine financial need for each student. And in the interest of time, I'll quickly go through these next slides. But each campus creates a separate cost of attendance, primarily based around enrollment level and where the student is living. The examples provided here are cost of attendances for full-time students who either live off-campus, on-campus, or with parent. I do want to talk about the FAFSA for just a minute. You've heard me mention this application already. I want to reiterate how important this application is, as it is the crux of how students get access to the majority of financial aid. It's a tool that determines financial need and can be found at studentaid.gov. And this is the only site a student should be going to fill out the FAFSA, and I want to emphasize the word free in the name of the application. A student should never pay to fill out this application. There are many scammers out there looking for vulnerable students and parents. I do want to mention that the financial aid offices do hold FAFSA workshops and have appointment opportunities for those seeking assistance. And generally speaking, the application should be available October 1 annually. However, the past 2 years with the release of the FAFSA application, it's been delayed due to the implementation of the FAFSA Simplification Act. For 25-26, we saw the FAFSA release earlier than the prior year. It was delayed to mid-November due to an extensive testing period that allowed the Department of Education to fix any bugs or processing issues before the full release of the FAFSA. The FAFSA uses a federal methodology to determine the student aid index, previously known as the Expected Family Contribution, or EFC. And as you can see, after 15 plus years in financial aid, my brain is still transitioning from EFC to SAI. So for the sake of this slide where you see EFC, I am referring to the SAI. In order to determine student need, the SAI is subtracted from the cost of attendance. At that point, financial aid offices can determine what types of financial aid the student is eligible for. Going further, the remaining student need is calculated by the cost of attendance minus the SAI minus total aid received, and the goal is to bring that remaining student need to zero by filling that bucket with as much additional financial aid as possible. Financial aid offices provide several resources to notify students of their financial need, as well as financial aid they may qualify for through the net price calculator provided on their websites, as well as the student financial aid award letter. What you see here is a very, very brief example of the information found on a financial aid award letter. Most award letters provide more detailed information and are customized to each student, but this gives you a general idea what a student receives from a financial aid office. It gives them the cost of attendance assigned to them by the institution, the SAI as derived from the FAFSA, and award information for all categories of financial aid they have qualified for. So as an example, at UNLV for the 24-25 year, this student's cost of attendance would be $30,617 minus the $18,000 SAI, leaving the student with $12,617 in need. Once all scholarships and grants are taken into account, the student then has loan options they can consider in order to fill the remainder of their need. And I do want to provide a disclaimer. This is just an example using sample numbers, just to show how all the concepts I've gone over come together. There it goes. Okay. The FAFSA Simplification Act became effective for the 24-25 year, and it was a complete overhaul in the FAFSA application processes and systems used to award federal student aid. There were many growing pains with the overhaul of the FAFSA for 24-25, which led to a more intentional rollout for 25-26. The full opening of the 25-26 FAFSA was delayed from October 1st to November 21st, and a beta testing period was opened on October 1, which allowed invited students only to complete their 25-26 FAFSA application. The beta testing process allowed federal student aid to evaluate any user barriers or bugs to fix prior to the full launch in November. And I would really like to point out that according to the National College Attainment Network, Nevada FAFSA submissions are up over 17% compared to this time last year. I would be remiss if I didn't give a special shout out to our financial aid staff, supporting departments, and agencies for this significant increase. Some of the major updates for 25-26 include a more user-friendly experience with a better streamlined process, a direct connection to IRS data with provided consent, a parent wizard for students with split families to determine which parent or parents should be the contributors on their FAFSA, changes to need analysis that leads to more students qualifying for Pell Grant, and conversely, the elimination of the number in college question potentially reducing grant eligibility. Prior to the Simplification Act, if more than one child from a household was attending college, the parent's income was effectively divided among college-bound students, which often led to higher financial need. Fast forward to today, the number of family members in college is no longer part of the calculation. So if students are affected by this or have any unusual financial circumstance, I would recommend that they reach out to their financial aid offices. There are often opportunities for professional judgment to make certain adjustments. And finally, 30 days ago when this presentation was put together, we were notified that federal student aid had increased support staff in their contact center and extended their hours to provide more student and parent support. However, as of this morning, it's been reported that FSA has reduced some of their support staff, specifically those who handle the financial aid complaints. So. And with that, Chair Del Carlo and members of the committee, I thank you, and we'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ashley, for such a thorough report. And with that, do we have any questions from members of the committee? Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record. I'm really happy that you included this slide about the Better FAFSA and acknowledging that it maybe had some hiccups when it rolled out. I know my inbox was flooded with students saying that they were worried about being able to pay for, and I have to give a shout out to the institutions that they were in because they did work with them. Mm-hmm. Not a single student that I talked to wasn't going to be able to get enrolled while this was all being ironed out. You mentioned an intentional rollout for the next year. Can you maybe share what some of the differences that we're seeing?
Yes. So as I, Ashley Salisbury, for the record, thank you for the question, Regent Brown. As I mentioned, there was a beta testing period that launched on October 1st, and there were a select group of students invited to fill out the 25-26 application. So once those applications were submitted, federal student aid could look at those submissions and identify any issues on their end. They could work with the students to figure out, you know, if they had any issues on the student side. And as that process or beta testing process moved along, they then expanded that invitation to more and more students, expanding the reach of the beta testing process. So when they got to November, I think they went through like three phases that they went through before they felt confident and sure that the application was ready for the full launch in November. So on November 21st, they launched the application to everybody.
And then Regent Brown, for the record, and thank you for sharing that. Do we think that we're going to see some of the same problems, or do we feel confident that this new rollout is going to kind of alleviate some of the hiccups that people were seeing? They were seeing that their applications weren't being processed and that it wasn't, you know, showing up in the same way, and their financial aid was significantly decreased unexpectedly, and then they couldn't you know, they didn't know how to pay for college.
I know, Ashley Salisbury, for the record, I know from talking to some of the colleagues that the experience has been much better for 25-26. They're not encountering as many user barriers as they had the prior year. I can't speak for 26-27, but as of right now, the experience has been a lot smoother than it was the first year of the FAFSA Simplification Act.
Wonderful. Well, that's optimistic. I know government doesn't always move at the speed of business. And so it's happy to see that through the system and our institutions that we've been able to alleviate some of these pain points.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask, I know I had asked about grants earlier in a different committee, but do we see any of this federal legislation as something that we should be planning for? Any bigger hiccups that we see on the horizon that we should be aware of?
At this time, we don't know what that's going to look like moving forward.
I'll make sure to monitor truth.
Absolutely.
Any other questions? No. Joe, no? Okay. I just have one thing. We do have a new education secretary who's really, really in favor of Workforce Pell. And I was, and Amy, Regent Carvalho, and Regent Brown, we were in Washington, D.C. in February for the Association of Community College Trustees Legislative Summit. We go back every year, and that's our number one issue. And we really feel that with this Congress, and President Biden was certainly for it too, but it just hasn't passed. But we really think it's going to be passing. This new education secretary is certainly in favor of this, our number one issue. And I think it'll be a game changer in the amount of applications we'll get. And I just want to echo what you said too, Ashley, that and thank all the financial aid officers for working so hard. I know the rollout nationally was rough. Mm-hmm. In every state it was, and I'm on the board for ACCT, and we heard it a lot on our calls. And I thank you for working through the process. And Regent Brown's right. Government doesn't move at the speed of business, and the beta testing I think could have been beta tested a little longer. But we're behind that now, and the fact that we're up, you said, 17% in FAFSA aid in Nevada is a testament to where we are right now. So that's a great increase.
Yep.
So thank you. And I have a question for our Chief of Staff, Carrie. I know under Board PAC we were able to take this report and put it in the library. Will we be able to put this report into that also?
Yes, you will. There is a resource library, and okay. Winter and I are working on building that for you.
Okay,
all.
Great. Right, because I use that. We have a resource library, and this is the kind of report, it's a once-a-year report, especially for new regents, that you can go in and look at when you're, like, you know, writing a speech for a presentation you're going to give. You want to know that Nevada gets $628 million, or $728 million in financial aid. I mean, it just helps.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. And with that, we'll go to... I'm sorry.
Do you mind?
That was an information-only item.
Oh, no, I know. I have another question.
Okay, one
so
more
sorry.
Question.
I'm so sorry.
That's
all right. Regent Brown, for the record, when Chair Del Carlo was speaking, something came to my mind. With the increase of 17% year over year filling out FAFSA, I seem to recall speaking with one of our presidents or provost academic officers, something about our campuses running programs that encourage, and they've seen like some... something at 100, like there's certain, I'm not being articulate right now, but I feel like there's something happening on our campuses that are encouraging this FAFSA and that they've seen participation. I mostly just highlight the good work happening, right? I just didn't know if you had any specific examples because it's coming to my brain. I'm missing details.
Ashley Salisbury, for the record, it may be the Nevada FAFSA challenge that might be, yes. So we are currently running a competition right now among high schools within Nevada. The competition will end on March 31st. They had to sign up to be a participant in our FAFSA completion initiative in order to be part of the competition. But yes, the high school, once we get all the data after March 31st, we will assess the FAFSA completion, and the high school with the highest percentage completion of the year-over-year increase will win a cash prize.
That's great.
Thank you so much. Yes, that is exactly what I was convoluting in my brain. But yes, I think this is so wonderful. And to all the students, I'm sure you're watching our meeting.
They better.
I do hope that our teachers and principals and, you know, the trustees, our counterparts at CCSD and across the state are encouraging their schools to take advantage of that, because that's really special. I'm glad you guys are rewarding good behavior, but also it's just good for them. So amazing. Thank you.
That was worth coming back to you for.
Yep.
I like the reward aspect of it, too. So thank you very much for a very thorough presentation.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll go to our last agenda item, which is credit for prior learning, and we'll give this to Vice Chancellor for Daniel Archer. And we did have this presentation in Workforce. This is a great presentation.
I think we're waiting to cue the PowerPoint. There we go. Thank you very much. So Daniel Archer, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. So I'm here to talk about our Credit for Prior Learning Action Plan here. And this came up at the strategic plan presentation in January that was presented to the full board. It's in the strategic plan document as well. So this is really kind of the start of our strategic plan in action. So that's kind of exciting. Very important to acknowledge, kind of build on what Regent Del Carlo noted, that this is sort of a workforce and an ARSA issue here, because it really falls sort of in both buckets here. So we're going to bring our work and our policy work and initiative work really through sort of both committees here. And as we dive into this, I want to start on a really positive note. Again, just recognize that we're not really starting from scratch and doing this work. We have a really strong foundation from which to build upon. And that foundation is based on our common course numbering system. There we go. So we have a system in place that standardizes course prefixes and numbers here. So just as one example, you'll see English composition is classified as ENG 101. And that's the sort of common number that's utilized across all of our campuses, all seven institutions. Another example is the financial accounting you'll see is ACC 201. Again, that applies across the board here. So we have courses that have a common identifier. It's sort of a standard label. It's a universal tag that is used throughout our entire system here. So again, standard labeling, universal recognition that applies across the board. So if someone takes ACC 201, at Institution A, and they transfer to Institution B, ACC 201 will transfer. And then if ACC 201 is a degree requirement at Institution B, it will satisfy that degree requirement without question, because, again, we have the same label, we have the same nomenclature, we're all kind of speaking the same language, which is a really foundational piece of being a really robust and effective system. So again, I want to reiterate that we have a really strong foundation to build upon here, but now we're going to get into the second layer, which is the primary reason we're here today, and that's to talk about credit for prior learning, which is also commonly referred to as CPL here. And just to shed light on the definition here, it's a term for various methods that colleges, universities, and other education or training providers use to evaluate learning that has occurred outside of the traditional academic environment. So for today's purposes, we're going to focus almost exclusively on nationally recognized exams. And this is a very simple premise here. Instead of taking the class, you simply take one exam, and if you perform well in that exam, there's opportunities to earn collegiate credit here. So very important to point out that there are cases where we have system-wide balance in the credit that is awarded through Credit for Prior Learning. So in other words, there are cases where students earn the same score on a nationally recognized exam, then it results in the same credit. When that occurs in our system at all seven institutions, we have the true balance, we have fairness, we have consistency, we have simplicity, we have clarity, we have all the things that we really want at the end of the day as a system here. So there are cases where we have balance. There are cases, though, where we have imbalance within the system on credit for prior learning. So just one example, we have a case where one institution awards 3 hours of credit for earning a specific score on a specific exam, and another institution awards 0 hours of credit for the exact same score on the exact same exam there. So similarly, we also have a case where we have one institution that awards 3 hours of credit for earning a specific score on a specific exam. Then we have another institution that awards 6 hours of credit for earning the exact same score on the exact same exam here. So as you see these imbalances here and you kind of absorb this information, I would encourage you to really think about this through a student perspective or through a parent perspective here, because when students see these imbalances, it really creates a lot of mixed messages within our system, a lot of confusion, which is a real issue, again, for our students, for our parents, for our families. But it's also a real issue for our K-12 system, because high school counselors and teachers are helping students navigate these processes and these systems. And when practices differ among our INCHI institutions, it complicates these efforts and certainly makes the navigation more difficult. So very important to acknowledge here that institutions were never sort of required to align here, so it makes sense that they haven't, because these types of things don't usually happen organically. So it's not a problem of wrongdoing, but it does create challenges, but it also creates an opportunity to do better for our students here, and that's why we're here, and that's what we want to focus on going forward here. So as far as today goes, just briefly here, we're primarily going to focus really on two areas today, or this is sort of an abbreviated presentation compared to the one we did for Workforce. So we're going to focus exclusively on advanced placement and what is called CLEP. So we're going to walk you through some of the inconsistencies that exist and also highlight our plan to move forward here in the immediate future. So first and foremost, it starts with advanced placement here. So we're talking about high school students taking an advanced high school course with college-level rigor. Typically, this is going to be taken during the senior year. And at the end of the year, the students who take an AP class, they have an opportunity to take an AP exam here. And you'll see that 25,000 Nevada high school students in 2024 took an AP course. And you'll see that over 42,000 AP exams were administered in Nevada. So we're not talking about a few students here and there. We're talking about thousands upon thousands of students each and every year that are taking AP exams here. And so the determination of whether credit is awarded is based on the AP scoring structure here. So when a student earns a 3, a 4, or a 5, again, a 3 or 4 or 5, board policy states that a student shall receive collegiate credit here. So we require that credit be awarded, but we don't specify what that credit is. And that's really the root of the problem. And when you kind of look at this scoring structure here, it's between a 1 and a 5 here, and you see a 3, you may think that's a low score, and I would get why you would think that. But I assure you that it's a very solid score. This is a very valid instrument. The students who are earning 3s on AP exams are performing very well in more advanced collegiate-level coursework. So I definitely want to emphasize a 3 is a really solid score here, and there really shouldn't be any concerns about that. In terms of some of the differences, really getting to the meat of this presentation here, we're talking about AP language and composition, that particular exam. And the reason we're highlighting this is the highest AP exam taken nationwide here. So we're talking about something that has a broad reach and a big impact here. And so just kind of breaking this down, looking at students who earn a 3 versus those who earn a 4 or a 5 here. And so good news is when we talk about those who earn a 3, we are aligned. All seven of our institutions are awarding the same credit and the same number of credit hours. There we go. Took a little bit. Sorry about that. So all institutions are on the same page when it comes to scoring a 3. But when students earn a 4 or 5, you'll see it is a little different here. You'll see that 6 of our 7 institutions are awarding credit for English Composition 1 and English Composition 2, which is 6 total credit hours there when you earn a 4 or 5. So that's 6 out of 7. However, there is one institution that is a left here, and this particular institution only awards the English Composition 1. So even if someone earns a 5, which is really sort of a superior score, they're only earning 3 hours of credit here. So we have some incongruities here. And I talked to an AP English teacher at one of the high schools here in the Valley over the summer, and she kind of described there's a running joke among a lot of the AP teachers that Enchi is sort of a moving target here. And I think that's a fair analysis. It's really hard for me to defend when we're a system, when we have these kind of differences here. So I think that's a fair analysis because we're one system, but we have two different credit possibilities for the exact same result here. We're not aligned, obviously, here. So I think it's also worth looking at this from an affordability lens. Because think about this if you're this student or you're the parent. And you have a 5, and you're only going to get credit for English Composition 1. You're going to have to take English Composition 2, and that means over $1,000, just over $1,000 in tuition and fees. And that adds up, regardless of what income level you come from here. So I think it's also important to look at things from an affordability standpoint here. So at the end of the day, we have these common numbered courses that work when students take them in the classroom, but we don't consistently award the same credit based on AP performance here. And then just want to briefly touch on CLEP here, the college level examination program, very similar to AP. We're talking about a nationally recognized exam. The main difference is that CLEP exams are not tied to a high school course. These exams are really open to anyone. They can be taken in the test centers at our Enchi institutions. There's not a prescribed requisite score and policy for awarding credit. However, there's a national norm that a score of 50 or more leads to collegiate level credit. So just to break down an example in our system of this. Here we go. Okay, so we've got an example here of someone taking accounting. They've earned principles of accounting. They've earned a 50 or higher. So in terms of how that breaks down in our system, we're going to get there. My go-go gadget is not working. There we go. Okay. So we have one institution that is awarding two accounting courses, financial accounting and managerial accounting. Then we have two institutions that are awarding credit for financial accounting, which is 3 hours. And then we have one institution that is awarding general elective credit. And then that leaves three institutions. And then we have three institutions that are awarding no credit at all. So again, one system, one exam, four different credit outputs for the same result here. So if you're looking at this through a parent lens or a student lens, the goalposts are literally moving from institution to institution here. So in terms of how we move forward with this here, we are working on policy revisions right now. We have some sort of dated language in there. So we're updating that. We have some restrictive policies that really impede innovation. We have a policy that states that you cannot accept more than 16 semester credits from non-traditional sources, which is an unnecessary restriction that certainly impedes opportunities for students who have credit for prior learning experiences. So that's something we're working on revising right now. We also need to map out our process for establishing system-wide credit for prior learning. Here, this will involve faculty coming together to review credit for prior learning and issue recommendations about system-wide credit here. So we're working on that policy right now, and we plan to share that with stakeholders here in the very near future. So we want to make sure that there are no surprises with this here. And so in terms of where we move forward, we do plan to run this again through workforce and through the ARSA committees. Because obviously, again, some of this is more academic in nature, some of it is more workforce in nature. So ultimately, we will run this through both committees in June. We plan to bring you proposed policy to review and hopefully approve at that point in time. And then in terms of where we move forward from here in the fall, this is really where the rubber meets the road and we roll up our sleeves and go to work. And that is working with faculty on system-wide standards here for AP, CLEP, and then International Baccalaureate is something very similar to AP that we want to standardize there. And then kind of more long-term, just kind of looking into 2026 here, give you a little preview of where we want to go with this more long-term is to kind of flip the focus toward kind of exploring and developing system-wide approaches to credit for prior learning for common military training that's out there and high school career tech courses and assessments here. I didn't have time to go through that latter piece today. We did talk about it in the workforce committee, so there's some good information there if you want to go back and look at that February 19th workforce committee. But that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions from any members of the committee? Oh, Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record. Thank you so much for giving this presentation. Like you said, this is the second time you've given it. The first time was in the Workforce Committee, and I've really enjoyed working with you and Natalie Brown at the system office because we've been able to identify things like this, things that are just inconsistent. And I've been saying it throughout in the Security Committee and in ARSA that consistency is the most important thing that as a system we can provide. I'm going to go back to former Chancellor Urquiaga's systeminess, still my favorite word that I've heard, and really embracing the systeminess. Other points that I made in the Workforce Committee, so I'll make them quick here, is by identifying this and streamlining and making sure that we're consistent, it's not just making it easier for our students. It's not just, you know, telling our students that their work outside of enrolling in an institution is being valued the same, but it's also going to cut down on the number of staff hours. This also will stop potentially... Yep. You know, having people transfer. These are barriers to entry. These are ways that we might lose somebody. I know we had given this example, but because our institutions recognize the credit given by other institutions within the system, if somebody was to go, let's say for your example, if they were in the one entry institution that doesn't give the 6 credits, what's to stop them from enrolling in that first institution that gives the 6 credits and then immediately moving into the institution that doesn't? We're going to recognize those 6 credits. And so this is just creating extra paperwork. So this is 2 administration offices that are now going to have to touch the student's paperwork. The students themselves are going to have to be read up on this process. Hopefully they have a counselor that helps them along the way. But these are so many opportunities to actually lose the student. Plus, it's just frustrating, and it's extra paperwork. So I'm just really happy that we're highlighting some of these inconsistencies, because as we kind of touch on, you said CLEP and AP, but there's also military service, right? We need to be able to recognize military service in the same way across the system. We need to recognize just all of these things. And so I'm just so happy that this is shining a brighter light on it, because I will repeat myself. We are the workforce pipeline of this state, and making it clear and concise and easy and consistent will be just, it will make us a better advocate for our students. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some pain points along the way. We have to acknowledge that. We are a system with, I don't even know how many things are in our course catalog. But I do think that touching on these, you know, bigger degrees, streamlining them, and then rolling out and working with our institutions. So I look forward to, through the workforce and through ARSA and just the system as a whole, working with our institutions to make sure that we are providing consistency for our students across ENCHI.
Well said, Regent Brown. Anybody else? Regent Fernandez.
Thank you so much. I really did appreciate this presentation, and I tuned in during the Workforce Committee as well, and I think this is so vital. It really is something that we've been needing, and I'll even challenge the notion that Regent Brown shared here, you know, like somebody transferring from one institution to the other to perhaps be able to get those credits. I don't see that happening, right? It really does make it a lot more difficult for somebody to even, you know, do this research, and we do want to ensure that our students are graduating as soon as they possibly can, and I think that there's a lot here that is happening that's addressing that, and I'm thankful for that process. I do. I keep thinking about your analogy of we should really be running as a highway, and I really look forward to us getting to that point.
Yes, this is Daniel Archer. I definitely will just echo that thought. And first system I worked in, we did big time alignment. It did sort of reduce the shopping that sort of goes around sometimes. So, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? Any regions not on the committee? No. Okay. This is really an important one. You know how I feel about this. And thank you for bringing it to our attention, Regent Brown, through your committee. And this is really a game changer, I think, to system this. So with that was an information only item. We will go to item 13. We have a new business. Is there any new business in at GBC? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going ahead. We got to finish. A new business from Regents. No, okay. Okay, now we'll go to item 14, public comment. Is there any public comment at GBC? Regent Ariscotta, do you have new business? Okay. Okay, GBC?
There is no public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. How about at the system office in Reno?
No, there is not.
Thank you, Regent Ariscotta. How about any here at NSU? How about on the phone? I remembered. None. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.